My name is Bailey Webster. I work for the Hmong American Farmers Association. We are a nonprofit organization that was founded in 2011, really led by family farmers. Paku Hang and Jansen Hang are brother and sister, and they grew up farming with their parents, and they founded HAFA. Paku is my boss. She's the executive director, and Jansen is the farm manager. So the Hmong American Farmers Association, our mission is really to advance the prosperity of Hmong farmers through cooperative endeavors, capacity building, and advocacy. HAFA was started and led by Hmong family farmers, as I said. It was a group of farmers that came together and really said, we need to help ourselves. We use a community organizing model. Paku has a background in political leadership, and she's really passionate about community organizing, and I'm really fortunate to learn a lot about that model from her. I'm the food hub director at HAFA, so I oversee the program that runs a 400-member CSA, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture. You'll learn more about that later. And we sell wholesale to the Twin Cities market. I just want to quickly state the obvious. I'm white. I'm not Hmong. And it's really important for me to say that I am not speaking for Hmong farmers. I am speaking from my own experience. I count myself very fortunate to work in the Hmong community and to learn from the Hmong farmers. And my focus is really on supporting Hmong leadership and the leadership of people of color. Standing up in front of a group like this is not really my wheelhouse. I'm more comfortable providing expertise kind of in the background. So this is not the most important part of my job. I'm really happy to be here. Just want you to know that. I've been on a long journey to understand my privilege, my place in a system of white supremacy, and I will always be on this journey. I make mistakes all the time, and I really strive to bring a spirit of humility and curiosity to my work. So I'm going to give you just a little bit of background about me so you know where I'm coming from. I have a BS in Horticultural Science from the University of Minnesota. I've been working in sustainable agriculture, working on small-scale family farms for the past 12 years. I've done a lot of internships, both with for-profit and nonprofit farms. I own a little farm in Prescott, Wisconsin, where I grow garlic commercially. At my job before I started at HAFA, I worked for the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service, so I've been in the organic farming circuit, conferences. So that's the background that I bring to HAFA. I want to talk a little bit about agriculture's contribution to climate change. So agriculture contributes about 13% of global carbon emissions in the world. And that's second only to the energy sector. So we're a huge contributor of carbon to climate change. And this slide really shows the different ways that agriculture contributes to climate change. Found my point here. So there's plant debris decomposing, biological activity is releasing carbon into the atmosphere. The more open ground there is, the more carbon is going into the atmosphere. We've got tractors that are releasing carbon all the time into the atmosphere. Fertilizers, conventional fertilizers, are very energy intensive to produce. They release a lot of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. Animals contribute a ton of methane gas, which is a super powerful greenhouse gas. Rice also produces methane. So there are all these ways that conventional agriculture contributes to climate change. It's a very extractive system, and it requires a lot of carbon, fossil fuel-heavy inputs to keep it going. And the real travesty about our agriculture system is that it really has the potential to be carbon neutral or even carbon negative, because the superpower of agriculture is that plants pull carbon out of the atmosphere and sequester it into the soil. And if you leave plants on the landscape and you're not disturbing them all the time, they're actually taking more carbon out of the atmosphere than they're releasing. So animal-based agriculture that's grass-based rather than feedlot-based is something that we should really be looking at as a way to mitigate climate change. So I love this quote, and I looked this up on the internet, and several people have said it, and I couldn't really figure out who said it first, but it's basically every system is perfectly designed to get the results it gets. Agriculture has been designed to be the way that it is. We have this myth in our society that agriculture broke in the 1950s, and with industrialization and tractors and chemical agriculture, and it's really not true. It's not broken. We designed it this way American agriculture was built on the backs of slave labor. It was built on lands stolen from indigenous people, and really in moving into a conventional system of agriculture that we have now, we've traded a huge human cost for a huge environmental cost. I really believe that the same forces that created the climate crisis also created the racial and gender oppression system that we have right now that we're struggling against. It's really not an accident that most of the food that we eat is harvested by people of color and marginalized communities, and that most of the land ownership in the United States is held by white farmers. So 96% of the land in the United States is owned by white people. Only 1% is owned by black people, even though black people founded our agriculture system in this country. So I'm going to get back to my story a little bit. This is me at a protest. I'm not really a protest person, but I show up once in a while. But I started really focused on climate change. As a kid, my parents were really interested in climate change. They would talk to us about it a lot. I would walk to the library and refuse to get a ride because I was so worried about the carbon that we would be releasing by driving a quarter of a mile to the library. And I went to college and started getting interested in organic agriculture as a way to address the climate situation. And at the same time, I started getting involved in my church. I'm a member at the Unitarian Church in St. Paul. And my church has a real strong social justice, racial justice focus. And it started to open my eyes to systems of oppression, white supremacy, my white privilege. And at the same time, I was going to these organic farming conferences and realizing that everybody there was a lot like me. They were all white. They were all pretty well educated. And I started to think, like, well, what is this? This doesn't make sense. Why is there not more representation? Because everybody eats. Lots of other cultures have agrarian backgrounds. In fact, all cultures are based in agrarian if you go back far enough. And so I started kind of shifting, keeping my interest in sustainable agriculture, shifting into racial justice, really, as my thing that I'm really passionate about. So now I'm going to kind of diverge into Hmong farmers and my work with the Hmong farmers at Hafa. So what's really important to know is that Hmong farmers are experiencing climate change right now in ways that most of us aren't really aware of it. I mean, when you're out on the landscape, when your livelihood depends on getting rain at the right time, not getting too much rain, getting the right weather, dealing with pests, the reality is climate change is here. It's disruptive. Last season was really, really difficult for our farmers. We had a long period of really dry and really hot. Our farmers come from a subsistence agriculture background, so they're not using a lot of irrigation methods. They're putting the crops in the ground and hoping that they get enough water. And that's really challenging right now. So farming is really central to Hmong culture. I'm going to look at my notes for this because I'm kind of new to Hmong history, but farming is central to Hmong culture. Before they came to the United States, they were subsistence farmers in Laos, and they used a slash-and-burn method of agriculture. So that's basically going into an area, cutting down all the trees, burning them, and then growing on that land. And you basically grow on the land until it's no longer fertile, and then you move to a new piece of land. And this works fine in an area that's not very population dense. So basically it's not sustainable anymore because we have so many humans on the planet. So the Hmong farmers had a real cooperative system of agriculture. They would, as a group, go and plant on Farmer A's land one day and then help Farmer B the next day. So the jump to a more cooperative model is really not a huge leap for them. The system of agriculture they had in Laos was a subsistence system, so they were growing just enough to feed their families and not a lot more. So Hmong as political refugees. I'm going to keep this a little bit short because I know that I think I'm a little bit slower than I thought, but farmers were, Hmong men and boys were contracted by the United States CIA in the 1960s during the Vietnam War to guard the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Laos. And it was called the Secret War because the United States was not supposed to be performing any political activity in Laos at the time. And after Vietnam, there was a coup in Laos, and communists came to power. And because the Hmong had been working with the United States, they were put into re-education camps in Laos. And many of them tried to flee. A lot of Hmong people tried to cross the Mekong River into Thailand. Tons and tons of people died. This would be like if you grabbed your family and strapped everybody together and tried to swim across the Mississippi River overnight. There are stories about this that are just really appallingly difficult. And so the Hmong that managed to make it to Thailand were put into refugee camps, and they were deemed political refugees because they couldn't go back to Laos. And they resettled all over the world, and many of them came to the United States. The biggest Hmong populations here are in Minnesota and California. The Twin Cities has the highest concentration of Hmong folks in the United States. So Hmong in Minnesota, when they got here, many of them were not literate, so they couldn't read and write. They didn't speak English. They had limited skills that were applicable to jobs here, and so they took to farming as a way to support their families. And they slowly got into the farmers markets, and anybody who has been to a farmers market knows that usually about half of the farmers there are Hmong. They've been really successful in the farmers markets, but they've faced some challenges too. So the birth of Hafa, in 2011, there was a finance and opportunity conference that the Hmong farmers were invited to. And after the conference, this group of Hmong farmers met together to debrief, and one of the farmers, I think it was this woman right back here, stood up and she said, "We need to stop waiting for someone to save us. We can save ourselves." And so Paku, who is my boss, she's right there, she had been working with a Bush fellowship to interview Hmong farmers and understand what challenges they were facing. This was a Thursday that this happened. The following Tuesday, she filed for 501c3 status, and the rest is history. We're a really robust organization with 19 families that farm on our land. We do $400,000 in sales through our food hub, and we have a really strong farmer training program. So traditional farming techniques, as I was saying before, were really not very sustainable. Since Hmong farmers have come to the United States, they tend to stay on the land for longer, and they have to learn sustainable methods of agriculture. So they have slowly been incorporating cover crops, integrated pest management practices, crop rotations, all these things that really contribute to a more resilient and robust agriculture system. Long-term land tenure really means more sustainable practices. So Hmong farmers, before Hafa, the Hmong farmers that we work with were leasing land year to year from mostly white farmers, and this would be a handshake lease because they didn't read and write English. It was on the farmer's honor, and they didn't know from year to year if they would be able to still farm there. I had a farmer this year who, I think back in March, was still wondering if he was going to have access to his parcel off of the Hafa farm. And this means that you're not going to invest in fruit trees or asparagus or strawberries or things where the soil doesn't need to be disturbed every year, because it's a big upfront investment and you need to be on the land for multiple seasons to recoup that investment. So Hafa gives farmers 10-year land leases. This is really essential. We have farmers planting raspberries and fruit trees and asparagus. I think we have like 60,000 crowns of asparagus going in this year, which is really exciting. How am I doing on time? 15 minutes. Okay, great. Thank you. I also want to highlight that local food systems are really going to be an important backup to California. I read a statistic online that said that by 2050, California's yields in some crops could be reduced by 40% because of climate change. This is going to be hugely impactful for our country, and food insecure communities are going to be hit first and hardest. And the Hmong population, Southeast Asians, are one of those communities that's already getting hit. So where I've come to in my work is an understanding that climate justice and social justice are really two sides of the same coin. You can't address one without addressing the other. They're so enmeshed, they're so intertwined, that we really have to look at both of them together. Einstein had a quote, "We can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them." And I think that that is so true. And I think a lot of the players at the table are similar to the ones that were there when we created this system. You know, the halls of power are filled with older white men, and there are awesome older white men out there. I don't want to knock them, but the diversity of perspective is just not that great, and we really need more marginalized voices at the table, and that's part of why I'm so proud to work for HAFA, to put my energy behind Paku, my boss, and my Hmong coworkers. And I think that especially for us white people, figuring out how we can put our egos aside and support other types of leadership that have more to offer in terms of understanding what true resilience looks like. So we need more farmers on the landscape if we are going to have a sustainable agriculture system. You just can't have one farmer for 20,000 acres and think that it's going to be sustainable. And one of the big challenges to this is that rural America is really hostile to people of color, minorities, even women. I mean, I'm farming 40 minutes outside of the city, and I get flack all the time. So this needs to be addressed. We need rural America to be more safe for people of color. And I don't know how to do that, but it's important. So what can you do? I know you're here because you're interested in making change in this area. Invest in female and people of color leadership. Find organizations that are led by somebody who's different from you, who brings a different perspective to the table. Fund them, volunteer for them. Volunteer to do some of the grunt work. So if you're going into an organization and you want to help and you're not willing to be the person that makes the coffee and does the dishes, you want to look at that. And there's room for everybody to bring their gifts and talents, but I think bringing a sense of humility and really wanting to help people, to free people up to do what they do really well, to share their gifts and talents in the world, is really important. Go to the farmer's market and buy from Hmong farmers. And my main piece of advice about this is go when it's raining. This is important because farmers are showing up regardless of the weather, and they're taking half to three quarters of their produce home on rainy days. And that's unfair. And they have tents. The St. Paul farmer's market is covered. There's really no excuse for us to not go and purchase fruits and vegetables from them. And then lastly, we do a community-supported agriculture program through HAFA, and you're welcome to sign up for that. I have some literature with me if you'd like some. And I'm going to show a quick video about we have a Veggie RX program at HAFA. And so we partner with hospitals. Fairview is our main champion right now. And their hospitals and clinics, doctors will identify patients who are food insecure, who have specific health conditions like chronic diabetes, and sign them up for this program, and they get a totally subsidized box of produce every week that they can bring home and cook for their families. And many of the families that we serve in this way are Southeast Asian. They know how to cook the vegetables that our farmers are growing, so it's really culturally appropriate. And it's just a really cool program.